Montreal. Morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a tight show for you today, with two pre-recorded interviews from the Arts and Culture spot and one from music. The first interview is with Laurent Lafontaine, president of the Massey-Mattie Foundation. The LGBTQ plus community comes together with Massey-Mattie to present a festival of films dealing with LGBTQ plus issues. After that, we'll visit the Radio Labour podcast of Solidarity News on Rabble.ca. A new agreement was reached with Uber. We'll hear about that later in the show. Next, we'll welcome Rishi Dhir of Elephant Stone with his latest musical work. 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather, and after some music, we'll visit the podcast called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, where this week's question is, are humans good or evil? After some more music, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Should aim myself to choke the screams. Draw my blood, but not with a needle. Am I awake or in a dream? Humans are no longer people. Thank you.
just so bittersweet. So till we meet again, in my head I'll dress you up, yeah, you're better when I can make your image into doll parts like your Ken. Guess that I didn't know about crying summer tears. You taught me everything I know, drowning
Tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM, Tuesdays, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., for a special Black History Month edition of the Montreal Sessions. The month kicks off on February 1st with the best in reggae and soca with your hosts, Production Sounds and Soca Head. Week 2, February 8th, Wizzy Moonchaser, host of the Morning Detour, broadcast live from DG Kicks, a sneaker store in NDG. Final 2 weeks, 15th and 22nd, are hosted by Stephen Ziplocks Hennessy, educator, creator,
and part of the Ill Groove Garden team. Don't miss it.
Faced with sickle cell anemia, the solution is in our blood. It's a matter of genetics. The more people from the Black communities who give blood, the better our chances to find compatible donors to help those affected by this disease. Faced with sickle cell anemia, we can't leave anyone behind. We have to donate. So don't wait. Book an appointment today at hemequebec.qc.ca because giving is in our blood.
Since 2009, the Massey-Matty Foundation has been bringing together lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer LGBTQ plus people of African descent backgrounds through its various arts-based community initiatives. Over the past 2 years, Massey-Matty has seen its mission evolve in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic. In hopes of standing strong with its communities, Massey-Matty continues to focus on the arts as a way to regain joy and wonder for life through these difficult times. With us today, we have Laurent Lafontaine of Massey-Matty. Hi, Laurent, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for the invitation.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you became involved in Massey-Matty.
Actually, my name is Laurent Lafontaine. I am the president of the Massey-Matty Foundation. I am actually in the festival since the beginning in the festival as a volunteer in 2009, because the first edition was in 2009. At the beginning, I was just a volunteer because I'm not the one who created the festival. And then I made my way, actually, I would say, in 2014, I become director of the programmations. And then in 2018, we create the Massey-Matty Foundations, actually. And then I become the president and the director of the festival. And actually, the reason of the festival is to have create a space and platform where we can show the works of Afro-queer people, because we have realized that there's not many spaces where their work can be exposed, and also to encourage other young artists or other artists to create also and to bring their voice to the table.
What is the history of the Massey-Matty Foundation?
Actually, it started, as I said, in 2009, because at the beginning, it started because people were thinking that LGBT issues did not concern the Black communities, and Black queer was invisible in the arts and in the society anyway. And so we, during the Black History Month, we create that festival during the Black History Month so that people can acknowledge the contribution of queer people in that month. And we wanted to do it through arts because we think arts it's important. Art is the soul of communities. It is important to exist in the art so that people can acknowledge our existence. And it was also a way to show people that we are here, we exist. And sometimes I remember when I show some movies at school to young people, and they said, "You are the first gay person I see, and the other person was the one I see on screen." So it was like in 2010, 2012, people were saying that. So it's for that the festival was important, actually. It's to bring those realities to life, and also, so that's it. And also we believe that art is a good way of expression also, because we can express many things through art, or sorrow, or joy, or struggle. And it's a way to connect with the emotions.
Massey-Matty invites the Canadian public to its 14th annual Afro LGBTQ+ Film and Arts Festival during Black History Month. Presented online by TD Bank Group from February 11th to March 11th, 2022, as a part of TD Ready Commitment, please tell us about Massey Maddy.
Massey Maddy, as I say, it's a festival that will be happening from February 11 to March 11. It's a film festival and art festival, but this for the fourth, this is we are about to celebrating our 14 editions, and we have about 30 movies that will be featured, documentaries, short feature, short features, and long features, and we cover actually a diversity of countries also, because we wanted to show realities from North America, Europe, also Africa, and South America, West Indies, so that people can know that, yes, the diversity that exists in the black communities. And we show a different kind of art also, because some movies are documentaries, some are love stories, and some are just about art, about dance. For example, when I'm thinking about Can You Bring It, this is a documentary about the dancer Bill T. Jones and the way his dance influenced the contemporary dance up to date. And we have more political movies like The Legend of Underground, which is a documentary about discrimination in Nigeria. And we have also Mama Gloria, which is a documentary about a trans woman who has created a sham school for young transgender, who has been a model for those people. So that's it. So we're trying to select a diverse subject, so everyone can have a look of their interest.
Which works will be presented, and what stories will be told?
As I say, yes, as I said, there are many stories that will be told. Actually, this year, we have six categories. We have a category of Renaissance. Renaissance, is the category where we talk about art in general, or art is maybe able where we can have a rebirth. So it is in this category that you will find movies like Can You Bring It? That I just talked about, and also the movies which called Fearless Serve, which is a documentary of the history of Black LGBT performance venue, and that was an organization that was created in Washington, and the way this organization tried to rebirth actually the Harlem Renaissance that was in USA. And we have also different categories. We have a category about body affirmation. Body affirmation, it is a category of Canadian films where we have documentary that put forward of how that encourage the acceptance of our bodies, even though our bodies do not fit the actual criteria of beauty. And we have another category of initiations, which is more for young people and also adolescents, like initiation to the world with the subject like non-binary people, or racism, or just discover of yourself when you are young. So people will be able to see all the categories and the films on our website, massimadzi.ca.
Why should an artist choose to be involved in the Massey Maddy Festival?
Because a place where these artists want to show other people about, it is important for us to feature Black Afro-queer artists, because it's a way that to encourage other people to create also. And it's also to, because we are the one of the rare space where we feature the black queer communities, it's to put in dialogue the artists with the society and the artists with other artists, which can share some affinities with his work.
Here are some audio trailers from some of the films.
Good morning, lady. And whatever you're calling yourself now.
Oh, God, the levels of oppression.
I know, right? Let us live, please.
Dude, who are you living for?
I'm an artist. I don't care about dumb rich people. All they do is complain all day long.
I love your whole look, but some of the older board members are confused.
About?
Your gender.
Listen, you gotta spend money to make money.
Yeah, but you gotta have money to spend money to make money.
The lotto is 483 million. You got your $2?
You know what? Fuck it.
All right, mommy! That's it!
Bring it in.
This is not a balletic piece. It's lyrical, but it's athletic. Demon in the Waters is a piece by Bill T. Jones. It is considered Jones's most successful dance.
For Demon in the Waters, Bill T. Jones.
All his movements always had some sort of meaning or task to them, and any emotion that came out, it came out of the movement.
The work was play. The play was work. The work was about changing perception.
Arnie and I were a couple. We wanted to make a community who had a mission and a direction.
That community thing changed radically when all of a sudden it was, how do we save ourselves?
You know, I remember half my phone book had died.
Recently, Arnie Zane learned he has AIDS.
Did I even see him once cry with frustration because he had to realize that he was not going to beat it? What is D-Man? Is it alive now? Is it a cautionary tale? Is it one of inspiration?
What is our AIDS right now? What are we going through? Your generation isn't doing it. So the nine of you are gonna do it. And you're gonna do it each night on that stage.
What do they share that is so big that you need a piece like this to move it?
Do you dare to let the stakes really be high? No matter what happens, don't give up.
We were hurting, but our work was a way that we kept going. Let me see your hands. It's I give up or I have nothing to fear. I love you. I love you. Yeah.
The only time I entered a closet was to get me a outfit and a pair of pumps.
When I came out of my mother's womb, I was out.
My mother and my grandmother were supportive of me. And they didn't want me to look like a overly done drag queen. And if my makeup wasn't right or my clothes wasn't right, they'd stop me and tell me, oh no, sister, you do it again. Then I said, well, let me get out here and help somebody who really needs my help. A bell went off in my head. They need a charm school here. I would have classes twice a week for the homeless, trans girls and guys. It was a sheer delight for me, you know, because here I am with my children. You turned out to be an amazing young woman, and I'm so proud of you. So many of my friends didn't make it. They're gone.
None of us, when we were young, ever thought about living to be this age.
It just came on out.
I'm living from month to month. I'm on Social Security. I want to get a boyfriend that's going to look after me or, you know, be close to me
I want him to be there so he can alert my family that I'm gone. And I remember hitting the floor and just laying there.
It's okay.
Yeah, we're gonna get you together. We'll fix you up. Corey, don't do nothing.
Okay.
Just moving.
Well, we just
don't start it quiet.
I'm all right.
I want you to just calm down.
I know she wants to be by herself. She's used to being independent.
It's not gonna move. So this is what we're gonna have to do.
I can't lay up too long. Life goes on no matter what.
I'm just gonna enjoy myself while I can.
I'm ready.
It's an honor to be here tonight to celebrate a living legend, the one and only Gloria Allen.
I thank God for the transgender people because we are a blessing.
All of the hurdles that you had to, you know, you had to go get over.
We have to know how to stand up and fight. You know, I never thought that people would treat me like the way they're treating me now. I feel like Snow White just being kissed and woke up. We don't know when our time is gonna come, but God has been so good to me.
Walk proud, because I'm gonna let you know I am somebody.
Care what colors we buy or what sex our baby is assigned. Every time I think of our baby, I think of little me, so scared to be in a world where people don't see me like I see me.
It's not too late to put the baby up for adoption.
Is that what you want?
I want our baby to come into this world and know that we were ready.
What is the purpose of the Massimati Foundation?
To fight against invisibility so that our realities and your experience can have a space to express themselves. And it's a way so that the artists and their works can be known by a public and can inspire others and can be called for more dominant medias.
If our listeners want more information, where should they go?
All the information will be available next week on our website, massimati.ca, and people can follow us on Instagram and Facebook page.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Laurent Lafontaine speaking about Massimati. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor World Report recorded on Friday, February 4th, 2022. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, how a union won the right to represent Uber workers. Women in India fight domestic abuse with WhatsApp. The Labor Start report about union events and rapping.
So put your hands together, all under one umbrella. It's time for unity, solidarity forever.
This is Radio Labor. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union in Canada has negotiated a breakthrough agreement with the transportation company Uber. The UFCW, with more than 250,000 members, is Canada's largest private sector union in the food, retail, and service sectors. To learn more about the agreement with Uber, I talked to Pablo Godoy. Mr. Godoy is the UFCW's regional director for Canada's western provinces. I asked him how many workers are covered by the agreement with Uber and what they do.
Well, the exciting agreement that we've recently announced between UFCW Canada and Uber Canada covers every single Uber driver and delivery person across Canada. You know, at any given time, there can be over 100,000 active workers on that platform. And what this agreement does, it allows us to provide representation to any driver or delivery person if they choose to have union representation throughout any disputes that they may have with the company.
What does the agreement provide the workers?
Directly, it provides them a representation when they face things like account deactivations, when they have missing wages, when there's issues with their accounts, when there's health and safety issues that they may face. For example, one of the groups that we were working with initially were the Uber Black tier drivers. So they drive for a particular tier on the Uber platform, and they service the airport. And as part of that service, sometimes they're asked to carry luggage, and people were having issues either pulling their bags or having slips and falls. And now we actually have a mechanism through which we can bring these issues to Uber and work on a resolve. And the mechanisms are different in that not only can we provide that representation throughout the process of investigation, but if we can't reach an accord or an agreement with Uber, we actually have been able to negotiate a third-party mediation forum through which we can then resolve any issue that's brought forward by a delivery person or by an Uber driver.
These provisions and activities sound like what would normally be covered by provincial or federal legislation. Is the agreement covered by that kind of legislation?
Unfortunately, gig workers and specifically Uber drivers and delivery people have been, to some extent, legislated out of really receiving any types of real formal protections. And so this attempts to actually create a representation model so that they can have a voice and so they can have a say in their workplace issues, because today, as it exists, provincial legislation really just hasn't kept up with technological innovation. And therefore, what we have is workers that are falling through the gaps of legislation. And what the second part of this agreement aims to do is actually push the government to include gig workers as a whole into more legislation.
The agreement calls on UFCW Canada and Uber Canada to lobby the national and provincial governments. Why would they do that? What would they lobby for?
I think it's first and foremost important to understand that we've had the representation of Uber drivers across Canada. We've been signing union cards across the country. We've had issues before the Labour Board in BC twice. We're obviously in at the Labour Board in Ontario right now in our certification process with Uber Black drivers. And so along the way, it became apparent that as we kept on being inundated by questions, comments, concerns, inquiries by drivers, that there was a need to have some form of representation. And so we were able to reach an agreement that pushed Uber's position on their legislative framework to include things like a minimum wage standard, like things like a inclusion into or being able to have better access to unionization and collective bargaining rights. And so we've moved the needle on where the biggest company in the space is willing to go to the government and ask for things like workers' rights to be applied to Uber drivers and delivery people.
This sounds like a breakthrough. Tell us a bit more about how you got Uber to accept the agreement.
Again, I think it comes to just the varying times that we were able to interface with the company. And so naturally, throughout those moments, there was a lot of conversations that took place. And what became apparent is that either we were going to keep, you know, having to meet in those spaces, or there may be an ability to create a model where at least today in the immediate term, workers can have access to representation.
Women in India were subjected to even more domestic violence as pandemic lockdowns were implemented, but they fought back. Seemari Ainsborough has a report.
When the COVID-19 pandemic hit India in 2020, the effects were especially hard on women. As the government implemented lockdowns and forced people to stay in their homes, women were isolated and left without help to protect themselves. The rate of domestic violence soared, and there was very little assistance from the government. But women across the nation started to organize. One group started to use WhatsApp to connect their members over vast areas. WhatsApp is a messaging service which lets users text each other, chat, and share media, including voice messages and video. It's particularly useful for lower-income people because it uses data transfer and so does not cut into their monthly text allotment. To highlight the digital activism of women in India during the pandemic, the International Transport Workers Federation, the ITF, produced a video.
In 2020, as the Indian government called for a nationwide lockdown to combat the pandemic, it witnessed a surge in domestic violence cases. A complete lockdown meant that accessing support became difficult, leaving women trapped at the mercy of their abusers. Despite these hurdles, women advocates in India were able to provide relief and support to survivors without even stepping outside their homes, through a network of WhatsApp groups. As India makes rapid strides digitally, a huge demographic still remains largely disconnected. For many women in the country, networking is restricted to their locality at best, limiting them from raising voice against issues universal to women. Among the many hurdles that inhibit women from coming forward are her assigned roles and responsibilities at home, leaving little or no time after work hours, the need to take permission, and the fear of being harassed for stepping outside her boundaries. The lack of women-friendly spaces and social stigma, which robs them of their right to gather and organize. Even at work, women are left out of core decision-making, making it difficult for them to address their issues and raise support. Women advocates, or Nirbhayas, as they are known in India, have created a primary WhatsApp group called Pramukh Nirbhaya, consisting of about 250 core members from the 36 districts of Maharashtra. Fortnightly discussions are conducted in the group on major issues, and decisions are made, which are then passed on to secondary groups from each district, consisting of women from respective depots. In this way, information is spread all across the state, reaching more than 5,000 women within minutes. In December 2019, a group of Nirbhayas set out on a road trip to conduct workshops and surveys on domestic violence in the state. Over 2 months, Nirbhayas scaled all 36 districts of Maharashtra, a region roughly 2 times the size of England. A program of this scale had to be planned meticulously, on locations to visit, mobilizing women, preparing them and the venues for workshops, all of which was done on WhatsApp well before the kickoff date. Nirbhayas surveyed and interacted with over 6,000 women, along with alliance groups like the police, healthcare officials, and NGOs. This further increased their digital reach, which proved invaluable when the nationwide lockdown led to a rise in domestic violence. Soon, a system was put in place. Helplines were shared widely across groups, and a lot of women had a network of allies to seek help from.
The video was produced by the Women's Advocate Program of the ITF and Women Transporting the World. This is C. Marie Ainsborough reporting for Radio Labor.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top story section included links to coverage of the global campaign by the International Union of Food Workers and Labor Start to force the release of 8 Cambodian casino workers imprisoned for leading a strike. To date, over 12,000 workers around the world have sent solidarity messages through our site. Labor Start volunteers were also monitoring the coverage of an historic union representation vote at a General Motors factory in Mexico and the way in which trade unions in Myanmar marked the anniversary of the military coup there. But our favorite top story of the week was from Turkey, where the police had to be deployed in large numbers when hundreds of metal workers occupied a factory to protest the sacking of some of their co-workers and the refusal of their employer to engage with their union. We also carried news from Afghanistan, where journalists continue to suffer harassment from the new government, about Finland's new commerce sector collective agreement. And from Lesotho, we carried the news that the teachers' union there is acting to force the release from prison of a student leader. Also this week, our volunteers continue to track the wave of unionization efforts that is overtaking Starbucks in the United States. For our Working Women pages, our volunteers found stories detailing why women will be most affected by increased wages in Australia's care sector, why there is a global shortage of midwives, and why so many of Fiji's nurses, almost all of whom are women, are leaving the profession or the country, and the impact of this on that country's healthcare system. A small sample of the stories appearing on our health and safety page in Newswire this week includes coverage of the resumption of the criminal trial of those held responsible for the deaths of over 1,000 Bangladeshi garment workers in the Rana Plaza disaster. The trial was on hold for almost 5 years. Critics say that the delay favors the accused. We also had items about the building collapse in India that killed 5 workers this week and the International Labor Organization's call for global standards to protect workers who are now teleworking. Our photo of the week is of those 200 Turkish workers who occupied their workplace to protest the sacking of co-workers and their employer's failure to recognize their union. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is a new Solidarity Forever. The first singer you will hear is Ruben Benny Esguerra. The second is the UFCW's Pablo Godoy.
No more division, no, we're bringing a new vision. And it's just in time from ashes, we give birth a new tradition. Solidarity forever with a new millennium flavor. Just gather now, come here. Divisions are created by those who doubt and fear. We give thanks to all the workers who put it all on the line. Those who took it to the streets, moving crowds with conscious rhymes. Those who gave their lives, give thanks to those who made lost. Lost only work for those who make them, not break them, be patient. The best way to protect your rights is by always knowing your rights. Without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. So put your hands together, all under one umbrella. It's time for unity, solidarity forever. Feel me? Stay rooted.
Yo, your prophet's never seen to help the people prosper. Your money's being hoarded and the people are unsupported. Social welfare's been aborted, labor crimes go unreported. When we try to fight back, it seems we can't afford it. We try to be united, but they're implementing laws that are keeping us divided. They're commodifying labor, then they're bidding for the lowest. They're thinking that it's clever, but we know it's something better. Solidarity forever. Now jobs are disappearing and all we're ever hearing is pay a lot more, get paid a little less. Work a little harder, then work a little longer. But we're taking it no longer. We're decided, we're uniting, cause together we are stronger. The unions got our back, CBAs, protections, better wages, a fact. So we're making our choice and we're making some noise. We're walking with poise and we're raising our voice. We're singing.
The new Solidarity Forever was produced by UFCW Canada. And that's it, labor news you can use. You can listen to our daily newscasts and features at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Belanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
Elephant Stone is a true crossbreed between pop, psychedelic rock, and traditional Indian music. The group formed more than 12 years ago and has toured steadily over multiple continents since. With us today, we have Rishi Dhir from Elephant Stone. Hi, Rishi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you became involved in Elephant Stone.
I'm Rishi. I play bass, sitar, and I'm a songwriter in Elephant Stone, which I started back in, I think in 2009 or so. The project just came out of me, of pure expression and wanting to create something of my own. Six albums, 13 years later, here we are.
Who are your bandmates and what does everyone play or do?
Band right now is myself, my drummer Miles Dupil-Gagnon, who's been in the band, since probably 2012. Robbie MacArthur, our guitar player, who I've been in previous bands with. We're also in the High Dials together, an old band. And Jason Kent, who's another old friend of mine that's in the band. So I've gone through a lot of members over the years, but it's like a revolving door of friends that always come into Elephant Stone.
The name of your new EP is Le Voyage de Monsieur Lonely dans la Lune. What is the story behind this EP?
Well, this is pretty much my lockdown album. It was the storyline. It just started with this idea of a solitary hermit in a dystopian world where all of a sudden the whole world shuts down, then everyone else starts staying home and sheltering in place. And he sees this as a mockery of his condition, his lifestyle. So he decides the only way to escape this is to build a spaceship and go live on the moon. It's funny because, like, in my mind, it was always a story. But at the same time, it's kind of a reflection of myself. In some ways, I'm an introverted extrovert in some ways. Like, I put myself out there, but at the same time, I do like my lonely, quiet time. So I guess it is about me in the end. Like, my wife always points out that between the two of us, she always saw me the extrovert, but with COVID and everything that happened, I was actually quite happy just being at home in my studio, not connecting with anyone. And she saw that as a problem. So I wrote the CP in French.
You're going to release a single called L'Effusée de Chagrin. What is the story behind this song?
As I mentioned, the EP has a pretty strong storyline throughout it, narrative. It's four songs, and the L'Effusée du Chagrin was part two, so it's literally the rocket of sorrow. So Mr. Lonely boards this rocket to the moon. Yeah, the song's basically the journey from Earth to the moon on the rocket of sorrow.
May we listen to some of your music?
Yes, please.
This is L'Effusée du Chagrin on the Wednesday Morning After.
Ignition sequence start.
Another single of yours is Monsieur Lonely. What is the process you go through when you write and produce a song?
Every song kind of just starts with a small idea, a hook or a word. It's interesting, actually, for Monsieur Lonely, the idea for the song started back in 2012. I was in a band called the Black Angels from Texas. I was touring with them for a year. And I remember just one day after a show backstage, we're just hanging out in the green room getting drunk. And then we had guitars and we're just making up songs. And I came up with a riff for Miss You Lonely. And it was like this kind of 60s garage tune. And it kind of always stuck with me. And we always were like, oh, we'll record it one day. And we never did. And fast forward to COVID times and I was home and I was just like, I always played the riff. And I had more time to actually flesh it out. From that grew the other songs. But yeah, that's Mr. Lonely has been in my world for a while now.
May we hear some more of your music?
Sure, go for it.
This is Mr. Lonely on CKUT.
Thank you.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
For supporting artists, I think Bandcamp is the place to be right now. So yeah, well, you'll find all our records on Bandcamp. We have, for the EP actually, we have like a very, very limited edition vinyl release. That's beautiful. It's like splatter vinyl and everything.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Rishi Dhir of Elephant Stone speaking about his music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Vibe with me. Vibe with me. Shout out Mismo. Always dropping that fire, man. This one's for the hip-hop heads, though. It's real.
Goddamn, Mismo.
Music nearly made me depressed. I'm just tired and stressed. Thought I would have a lot more, but I got a little less. 35K streams in a year. That won't even cover the expense that I pay for my tears. Won't even cover 2 hours of studio time. Used to think that the world was mine, but I was young, dumb, and blind. Couldn't even read the signs. They asked why I gotta rap about this sad shit, cause I'm sad shit. 2020 had me really feeling empty. If it wasn't for my shorty this year, would have probably ended me. Forget a punchline, I don't really got the energy. I'd rather drown my sorrows in a bottle of some Hennessy. I'm about to quit rapping and just make it all a memory. Definitely could have been one of the best to do it. But this pain in this music, I don't want to go through it. Paid thousands of dollars, couldn't even get 1,000 back in revenue. Eventually that type of L just gets to you. All this optimism doesn't seem like it could get me through. So I'm throwing in the towel, cause this industry is foul. Man, forget a noun about. I just really want to howl. I just really want to scream. I just really need God to divinely intervene. I just really need to be seen, discovered from my dreams. I remember going through the same shit at 17, almost 29. What the hell am I not seeing? It's like I'm being held back for a reason. Never thought this would last for years. Only a couple seasons, constantly fighting demons. That last punch got me reaching and gasping for air. Like I'm in the ass bins at the highest of tears. I'm just here to enlighten your ears. No sound bites, but on the mic, Mike Tyson your ears. And bites of my fears. 2021, I'm coming for my sons, beware. That's a quick turnaround, but I'll never fade away. Gotta make a way, me giving up is some type of shit that I don't ever say. Without signing to a major, do this in a major way. I wrote this letter to myself and fans to say I'm here to stay. Put my hands together as I bow my head, let us pray.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. This month, Democracy Now! Is celebrating our 26th anniversary. That's 26 years of bringing you the stories and voices you won't hear anywhere else. We maintain our editorial independence thanks to you. Please donate today at democracynow.org and help us stay on the air for decades to come. Thank you so much. And remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The resurgence of coup d'etats in our region is in direct violation of our democratic tenets and represents a threat to peace, security, and stability in West Africa.
The African Union's condemned a wave of coups in Africa, where military forces have seized power in Mali, Chad, Guinea, Sudan, Burkina Faso over the last 18 months. Several of the coups were led by U.S.-trained officers. We'll get the latest. Then to Minneapolis, where protests are continuing after police fatally shot Amir Locke, a 22-year-old black man who was sleeping on a couch during an early morning no-knock raid.
They saw a black man reach for his gun, not knowing anything about Amir, and then they shot. I mean, they didn't even give him a chance.
We'll speak to attorney Ben Crump, representing Amir Locke's family. Plus, we go to Oakland, where a group of teachers have entered the eighth day of a hunger strike to protest a plan to close and merge over a dozen schools.
Oakland is not...